You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Adam Piasecki. Have I pronounced it right?
Piasecki
or ha?
Piasecki.
Piasecki. Okay, I knew that going in, but I could not remember, and we didn't have a chance to correct it beforehand. So Adam, tell me what. The way we start the show is to kind of begin to get to know each other. We've actually met one other time, maybe almost two or three years ago.
Correct.
Yeah. That was in light of some work you were doing with Catholic Charities, I think, mm-hmm. and the teaching.
It was Labor Day weekend, Labor Day I believe. Weekend. Yes,
that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. So, but this time we're going to focus on you.
Okay.
So who are you?
My name is Adam Piasecki. I am currently an educator. I'm an employee of the Ithaca City School District. I'm an elementary teacher. But I've been so fortunate and honored and lucky to have my colleagues, the members of the Ithaca Teachers Association, our union of professionals that represents the certificated teachers in the Ithaca School District, to be their president of our association, of our union. And I've been going, we're going into my fifth year of doing that title.
Sure.
And every day it is a blessing, and I'm honored, and I thank them every day for the opportunity, and I work every day to make sure I am doing for them what they need.
Mm-hmm. What about your life led you into this role? Particularly, you're young. I mean, you're young for this kind of responsibility. How did that lead you in this?
Yeah, I sometimes try not to think of my age or my age of when something that I reflect on too much, but I hear that a lot, and that I guess that kind of sometimes means a lot to me, because it means that I've been able to do something at a much younger age, and that people gave me the opportunity.
You were trusted, and that is a big thing. That's the only. It's not the issue isn't.
Given the opportunity, right?
Yeah. The issue is that you were trusted, and what about you? Do you think they saw that allowed them to trust you?
I think, you know, on the professional side of it, and then we can talk a little about the personal side. Is that, you know, when I came into the teaching field, I had great mentors, and mm-hmm. I always want to honor them. But then the inner drive of me just kind of propelled me to be this teacher who spoke up for not only public school children in our public schools, but to also advocate for a group of people that was needing a voice and mm-hmm. somebody who was willing to advocate, somebody who was willing to listen, somebody who was willing to know how to compromise, and willing to take the time. It takes a lot of time and energy to do this work, and I just kind of started showing that right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And within the first, you know, few years, I said I would do this, I would do that. My predecessor was willing to kind of let me in, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I started getting to the bigger picture of things, learning from people locally and across the state, and it just propelled me into becoming more active. I dumped a lot of time and energy into it, and I think people appreciated that, and hopefully the things that I was doing and saying allowed them to trust me, that varies a little bit now, but now that you're in the role and you mm-hmm. have to make decisions, obviously, but other than that, I think that there still is a lot there, and I appreciate it.
And the attainment, preparation for the attainment of power is always a little different than the actual exercise of it once you have a role mm-hmm. that people count on. And like you say, you have to make decisions.
Right. Yeah. So it's been interesting over the last few years, and each year looks a little bit different as you work on different situations. But I'm here, I'm still doing it, mm-hmm. and I appreciate it. And I love opportunities like this, too. This mm-hmm. is what's been great about this field. You don't often know about these things or involved in them until you actually get into something where others reach out to you. So thank you.
Yeah. And you are part of the heartbeat of one of the top four or five employers, probably the number three employer locally. And that role is something we need to know about.
Yeah. No, I have heard that. I actually don't know the exact stats, but yes, our association, and of course, not all, even some of those employers that you mentioned don't have a union. They're non-union.
Right.
So
in
terms of an association, a union, I believe it's one of the largest here in the area with about 600 members.
Right. You brought music. And the song that we were going to start with was Defying Gravity. And I, given what you just said about your role, I want you to talk about your personal piece. But maybe we should talk about that a little after the first song. Or do you want to?
I could quickly comment on maybe like the mix. Sure. And then we can talk a little bit afterwards. Yeah. So obviously, I personally, I enjoy music. I played the piano when I was younger and fell in love with lyrics and songs. And obviously, I adore and really kind of follow musicals. I unfortunately wish I could afford getting to the city more often to do some shows. There's nothing like that feeling of being in New York and seeing a show live and feeling that brings a smile to my face the few times that I've been able to do it. So I do what I can within my affordability, which is to download the songs, learn about it, read about it, watch the TV. So musicals are something that I really like, especially the lyrics. And in terms of this, it hits you. You know, I don't know too many people who don't know the song because it's become so popular. But I think just if outside of the popularity issue of it, just looking at the lyrics and how it was embedded in the song, the words just mean so much. And it's kind of who I am as a person. How do I do something, no matter how hard it is,
right?
And then professionally, I'm doing that as well. So a lot of the lyrics just make sense for me.
Okay, good. We're gonna go there.
It's the wizard who should be afraid of me.
Alfie, listen to me. Just say you're sorry. Before it's too late, you can still be with the wizard. What you've worked and waited for, you can have all you ever wanted.
I know,
but I don't want it.
No,
I can't want it anymore. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instinct. Close my eyes and leave. It's time to trust. So, some things I cannot change. Until I try, I'll never know. Too long I've been afraid of losing love, I guess I'm lost. Well, if that's love, it comes at much too high a cost. I sooner by defying gravity. Kiss me goodbye, I'm defying. Think of what we could do. Together, unlimited. Together, we're unlimited. Together, we'll be the greatest team that's ever been. Glenn and dreams the way we planned them. If we work in tandem, there's no fight we cannot win. Just you and love. you're choosing this. You too. I hope it brings you bliss. I really hope you get it and you don't live to regret it. I hope you're
Defying Gravity from Wicked, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Adam Piasecki. So, Adam, what are the experiences that have shaped you so that you could take some of those risks as embodied in the song?
That's a difficult question because I sometimes don't know how to answer that. I think some of it just comes from who I am, you know,
right.
How you wake up every day and if what you're feeling. And then obviously the experiences help shape you as well. You know, obviously.
But to take you on your terms, when you wake up in the day, who are you? What is it? How do you greet the morning?
Yeah. I think all the time. I'm constantly thinking. My partner's always laughing because I don't know how to relax from that thinking.
Right.
Uh-huh. So I'm always thinking, reflecting, and I always want to help people. That's why I became a teacher. You know, I wanted to make sure that there was something that I was doing that wasn't just typing or wasn't just doing something that I didn't feel it was helping. I wanted to teach. I'd wanted to be a teacher for a long time. Ever since I was a little kid, I didn't think I was ever going to actually get there. I actually started losing that kind of dream when I was in high school. I grew up very poor, very low income. The idea of a college tuition or anything like that was something that, or a college savings or anything, was something that you didn't have. Parents divorced, lived with a grandmother for a while, lived with an aunt and uncle. I was on my own when I was a senior in high school.
Right.
I had my own apartment. I was living on my own, trying to support myself. And the thought of going to school to do something like that was something I didn't think I'd ever actually accomplish. I thought doing something in just labor-wise was going to be what I was going to have to do. Unfortunately, I just figured it out, and I supported myself through going to a local community college and just proceeded and kept working from there.
So I don't want you to, what you have just done is you have just kind of, you sorted it out. I want to unpack that a little bit. It seems like your dream was very strong, but you were ready almost to let it go as unrealistic. What changed in you to make it possible that you could sort it out? And what did you do to sort it out?
I think just having some people still around, some family members and others that I just admired, plus it just my inner being was like, I have to figure out something. I need to do this. I need to enroll. I need to go. If it meant taking longer to get through, I needed to do that. If it meant not having a lot of food, I would have to do that too. You know, I figured out what I had to do, kept secrets about what I had. You know, if I didn't have enough food, I would lie about it, you know, just do all these types of things because I wanted to show that I was strong and that I was going to do this. And you know, when I think back now, I don't want to ever go back to those years, but I think, wow, like that's how a lot of people are still living, and I want to help with that. And I think, you know, education, advocating for others, social justice, human rights are obviously the things that now I can do.
Right. What is it about not wanting to lie? I mean, wanting to lie when you didn't have enough food and to say that you did have. What is that protecting? Because that's an experience a lot of people who don't have food go through.
Yeah.
But we don't. Many people who haven't don't understand.
Yeah, you know, I don't. Again, that's a difficult thing to answer. I don't know what it was at the time. I think I just didn't want to feel like that I wasn't doing something for myself, or that I needed the handout.
Right, you didn't want to be an object of pity.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I lived that for quite a few years. I remember walking into the grocery store and thinking, okay, and actually adding up the few items that I could get, and knowing like I don't want to get to the counter and say I only have $25, and take something off. Like I remember those days because I didn't want to ask my mother or somebody else for money. But at the same time, I remember this now. You know, obviously, when you get older, you reflect back, and I remember being a child. I mean, as young as, you know, 8-10 years old, where you know, grocery shopping was on a late Friday night. didn't realize why at the time, you know, but now I do.
You do. Yeah.
I remember
somebody's
my mom laughing with somebody who she met in an aisle one time, and saying, you know, that the groceries there were for her mother. And I'm thinking, we're not here shopping for grandma, you know, for grandma.
Right.
This is our stuff. Thinking back at it now, I know why. You know, it was food stamps.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah,
that
yeah.
embarrassment right. of that, but blaming it on your mother is one, you know, something else. So, you know, I think that...
Okay.
And so, you know, there's just, I reflect back now to things that happened that I didn't realize what they were all about then. And then you're right, that kind of led me to, wow, when I was on my own, in struggling, you know, I kind of was really doing those same things. And I know, you know, a lot of our members of our community are still doing that today.
Right. I worked in a grocery store before food stamps, before there were food stamps.
Yeah.
The grocery store, if a person couldn't pay, they would say, "Do you just want us to write a chit?" Because they wouldn't let people leave without their food.
Mm.
This was a small town grocery store, and this was the way food insecurity was dealt with. And people would build up chits for what they couldn't pay. And then the guy would either, they would say, "If you plan on paying it off, we'll keep it. If not, we'll write it off." And every year the grocery store just wrote off a certain amount of sales, because that's the way that responsibility was lived. And it was... you never had to put anything back. You know what I'm saying? In that sort of a situation. And it wasn't a big deal. It was still a deal. And the effort was to try to make it a dignified moment as opposed to a moment of humiliation.
Right.
It's so hard because we do to ourselves even what others don't do to us.
Right. That is true.
Yeah.
So I've moved on from that, and now I advocate and do what I can to help others, and I'm feel fortunate enough now that I have what I have, and that's great. But I know that others still need help.
And you emancipated yourself, in effect, in high school.
Just because of the living family room. And life situations.
Yeah.
You know,
and did that help? Did you have to take on, I mean, going to community college is the best cost-effective way to get initial college years in most instances. And I imagine that you were eligible. Did you have to take on great debt, or did you have to take on debt?
My mother, you know, had remarried. I hadn't lived with her since I was in middle school. So there was some assistance there with some things. But no, I signed student loan payments every semester. I think I've calculated it out. I'll still be paying on my student loans well into my late 50s.
You have got to be kidding.
No, I mean,
wow.
I get it.
And that's our age difference, mm-hmm. is that didn't happen when I was going through, but I graduated in 81, and it's been a story.
Right.
Much of the time since.
Yeah, then. As you're seeing it in the political world and everything right now, it is a huge problem. And I pay that every month and have done what I can to, over the last, 13 years to shrink that from what it really mm-hmm. should be. So it's down. So hopefully I don't actually reach that number of years, but it potentially could.
Right. No. I grew up in rural poverty, and my father died when I was 7, so I started working when I was 11, which was illegal, but we still did it. And that wasn't so much the problem, but the employer paid me 25 cents an hour less than I was supposed to get, so he got in trouble. Not so much for my age, but for the underpayment of 75 cents an hour instead of $1 an hour, which was the minimum wage in those days, which is worth $15 an hour now, which is kind of bizarre when you think about
conversation
it.
Right yeah, there. Yeah.
Another one. So I made almost as much as my mother did working through middle school and high school because she worked for the minimum wage or a little above that the whole time, and I worked for the minimum wage or for farmhand wages, which were higher than that in those days. They aren't now because of shifts in the economy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just want to go back. Having gone through what you've gone through, what did you learn about human nature and your own nature that you probably wouldn't have learned had you not lived the way you did?
Oh, that's another tough one. Like I said, I've done a lot of reflecting back. If it wasn't for the community college, which now in my role as a teacher and as a unionist, union leader, we're advocating lobbying for the quality public school system.
Sure.
Pre-K through 12, community college, SUNY and CUNY. These are the things that we need to keep doing. And so I do that. That propelled me to be able to keep going and do something that I could get to. One of the other things that kind of happened, while I was getting an education, which is why mm-hmm. I became a teacher, is because I knew that how important it is that, it opens up, worlds that you don't know exist, mm-hmm. Fields that you don't know exist. Just the more you learn, the better. It was, a few years into the school, because of who I was, what I had gone through, that I, fell in love with sociology courses, mm-hmm. anthropology courses, the humanities, and that kind of became almost like the emphasis of what I was doing, along with how do I still become this teacher. So I'm not one of those traditional teachers mm-hmm. that went right into an education program. I have a very big social science, social studies, liberal arts kind of background, which I think people have asked me, how did you become a union leader? Like, where did that come from? Not everybody goes into education saying, I'm going to go do that someday. And I didn't go to school for labor relations. I didn't go to school for nonprofit management kind of thing. Right. Which is running an association, but that sociology, that kind of humanities, this liberal arts kind of stuff propelled me into human rights, social justice, and so I'm still doing that while I was a very dedicated and effective mm-hmm. Classroom teacher for many years.
You said from a very early age you wanted to be a teacher. What drew you to that desire, either what pushed you from the situation where you were coming out of, or what pulled you from that, from the teachers that you saw?
Yeah, I've had questions like that in the past, and I've said, I think that there were obviously you hear about people all the time talking about it was certain teachers that made them want to be a teacher.
Or
obviously,
not.
there was some of that. Obviously, I have a desire for learning, and I liked school, even though it was not always school, and living in a having low income, being
and living in a chaotic,
struggles,
and it seems like a little bit of a chaotic environment.
That schools need to help with those situations as well. So I can't exactly say what drove me at a certain point, whether it was when I said I wanted to be when I was in third grade, or what still made me want to say when I graduated from high school, like, oh, I'm going to go to school to be a teacher. You know, I'm not sure exactly every little incident or right. Thing, but, you know, that's what I think, you know, and now that I represent teachers and I've learned from my colleagues along the years and speak with them all the time, it's an inner drive. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. I would not want to be an emergency room nurse that right. comes from who they are. I would not right. want to do be a police officer. So there's right. certain things that I think, you know, we're embedded with sometimes mm-hmm. and that comes out, and then people change over time. But obviously there is something about wanting to be a teacher, and sometimes people know from an early age, and we hear it as teachers from students from an early age, they want to be.
Yeah, no. And I guess I was just wondering if there was a connection between some kids, and I'm the seventh of eight kids, seven surviving. And part of growing up in a chaotic environment is you want to learn how to be able to meet it and to some sense manage it. And I know people who've wanted to become teachers because they are intense learners, mm-hmm. because they're constantly learning and showing other siblings or other people how to manage. And that was partly my older siblings, okay. you know, my oldest sister who just turned 75. That was kind of how she helped take care of this six of us who came after her.
Right. You know, yeah. No, I can definitely see how that is. Like the role you take on, maybe yeah. it propels you into a career field. Yeah. No, that wasn't my situation, but no. is interesting. I'm sure there's many different reasons why.
All sorts of paths. Yeah, so that's why I pressed a little bit there. Yeah. So what, how have you changed? How has your practice, actually, I want you to think, let's play, take a music sure. break yep. here. What should we play next?
I think the Brave or My Fight Song actually fits in well here.
Which would you prefer?
We can do Brave.
Okay. This is where. This is Sarah Bareilles. How do you pronounce it? Bareilles?
Bareilles.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I'm never quite sure.
You can be amazing. You can turn a phrase into a weapon or a drug. You can be the outcast or be the backlash of somebody's lack of love. Or you can start speaking. Nothing's gonna hurt you the way the words do when they settle near your skin. Kept on the inside and no sunlight, sometimes a shadow wins. But I wonder what would happen if you say what you wanna say and let the words fall. You wanna say
was Sarah Bareilles in Brave, and our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Adam Piasecki, and you're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. So, Adam, how have you had to change in ways that you wouldn't have chosen or wouldn't have anticipated, and what have you learned from that?
Yeah. So, you know, you just played the song Brave, and we were chatting during the little playing there privately, just, you know, about how this is a little bit more of a pop song kind of thing. It just came out a little while ago, but the words and the lyrics are so powerful. The, you know, say what you want to say, show me how big or brave is to speak up, let your words fall out. It's so meaningful. It's who I am. How do you balance that? Say what you need to say, be respectful, be professional, advocate without it causing some type of thing, but you can't, I can't go to sleep at night knowing that I should have said something for somebody or myself. And so you asked the question, you know, about, you know, what, you know, can, I want you to repeat your question again, but, you know, I think that being a just my personal life, growing up, and what I've had to do to get to where I am today, being a teacher, working with a certain population that I still advocate for daily, and then obviously becoming a union leader, definitely has shaped me a little bit. But go ahead and say your question again. I can answer it.
In a certain sense, you have been headed on a trajectory of advocacy and I want to say... in a way that builds relationships and builds collaboration more than in your face.
Yeah.
So that seems like a trajectory consistent with your upbringing, learning how to navigate what is a political minefield with grace.
Emotional minefields, right?
Yes,
right,
a political, emotional, personal minefield with grace. How have you had to change your approach to that minefield over the years? Have there been things that you've had to learn that you never thought you'd have to learn how to do?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I played this song at opening day to our association meeting as we were leaving, and it was my theme for the year, to be brave. We were encountering a year where people were getting down about what was happening to them as teachers, and I wanted to be inspirational with this, and I felt the lyrics were great. You know, one story that I haven't shared too much, maybe within my my colleagues a little bit, especially other fellow union leaders, is a few years ago, Randy Weingarten, who's the current president of the American Federation of Teachers and was the previous president of the largest union, I think, in the States and maybe the larger area of being the president of the New York City Public School Teachers, the UFT. You know, I didn't know much about her. I knew who she was. I'd read little bios. Obviously, she's in the spotlight all the time. She is a graduate of Cornell, and she was coming here, and she make sure that the local person is invited. So I was invited when she was there. One of the professors made sure that I was a part of that. And she walked in, and you know, she kind of probably been debriefed on, this is the person who's going to be there. He's the local president of the Ithaca Teachers Association. And she came up to me. She's a tiny little thing. She came up to me, and I'm not that big of a guy. And she looked at me. She said, Adam. I said, yes. And she hugged me, and she said, nobody knows what a union president has to go through other than a union president. And thank you for doing that. And since that day, and that was only about a year and a half into doing it, and I think about that every time I have one of those nights where I think, what am I doing? Am I going to be able to sleep tonight? Am I going to be able to get right back in the game the next day because of something that was said or an email or something like that? So I share that, you know, here publicly, is because that she came from a place where she's had to reflect for many, many years. It's changed her, and it's definitely changed me. You know, yes, the advocacy is hard work. Speaking up is difficult to do. Not everybody can do it. And so it does, people rely on somebody to do it. I rely on people to do it in other areas that I'm not comfortable. The people who are not comfortable to do the work that I do are relying on me. Difficult conversations. you know, I think that in one of the other songs that's going to be played is this fight song. You know, unfortunately, what happens is advocating, trying to compromise, come up with agreements, resolve things, problem solving, whatever word you want to use, it's hard work. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, and I don't know how to resolve this, I wish I did. I'm sure you've heard it from other advocates. It does somehow turn into a fight somehow, mm-hmm. Both verbally and in writing, and it's unfortunate, but that's why it takes the leaders on both sides or whatever to keep talking, keep communicating out, and you know, you have to have a thick skin, and mm-hmm. you have to know that you're not going to make everybody happy, and mm-hmm. it's all you can do is communicate out and move on each day and keep doing the work that you're doing.
Right, and I guess... when you're in a fight, it's not just words, speaking and written words. It's physical. It affects your sleep and your ability to move. It affects your senses. It affects your emotions. And so, and I imagine that you're probably, you know, kind of in a fight or flight response a lot of the time when you're feeling in that engaged sort of way. As a culture, we don't teach people how to engage. And then how to use the minimal amount of force necessary to make a point or to hold a space. We aren't very good about teaching people about how to fight in a way that doesn't lead to just scorched earth damage.
Right.
And that is really, that's a commentary on our nation. And because we have spent so many years not doing it, we are in a mess right now as a country, in my yeah. less than humble opinion.
Hey.
But it's... What you're asking for is a quality of maturity that accepts that time. We do things that are ugly sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do them inadvertently. We do them intentionally, but they're ugly, and we may do them because we didn't see any other option. And had we seen one, we would have done something different. And we may do them because there was no other option, and we just have to carry on. And yeah. So what I'm curious about is, how do you hold yourself accountable in this is going to be in a different way, I think, than you probably ever gotten it. You know, in accountable in the sense that, how do you honor the judgment that you may have failed somebody you were advocating for, or the other side, because you didn't behave in an honorable way?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you repent or change that or confess it, let it be known, so that you can then move on?
Yeah. It's a very wearing thing, mm-hmm. Emotionally. Like I said, if you're really into the work, it affects you as a human. It affects your overall well-being.
Yes.
It can affect your mental health. It can affect your emotional health. It can affect your physical health. It affects everything. It really does.
Yeah.
You can take tension medicine. You can go to the gym. You can drink an alcoholic beverage. You can do all these other things.
Right.
But the job is still there, right. and who you are,
away.
People are relying on you. Yeah, you know, I think that you have to do what you have to do each day, make the decisions, make the calls, and move on from there. It's a lot of communication and conversation afterwards,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and that's something that you just have to keep doing. Sometimes you can't believe you're still talking about it or still mm-hmm. repeating it, but you still have to do that, and that's just part of the work. And I understand that you can't reach everybody at the same time. Everybody's lives are busy, so you just have to keep doing that. And
the
then you have
message.
To and listen, you know, like, yeah. Okay, what was the reason that you feel that this wasn't done a certain way? And then the next time something comes around similar, you reflect on that and you say, okay, now I'm going to approach this one this way. You know, some of the when people call me and I have conversations with them, I can't tell them what to do, but they sometimes ask for advice, and I say, well, you know, and I can't, you know, because of confidentiality, you have to figure out how to describe a previous situation without
right.
Too much, to say, here's how we've handled this before, or here's where this didn't go down the way that we thought it was going to, or here's how it came out in the way that we were very happy about. So it's a lot of conversation, and something that I always tell people, and I've learned this myself, is that very few things are of such urgency. And a lot of times I have to mentor and kind
right.
of advise, like, this can wait till Monday morning before you send that email.
Right.
Or this is, call me back on Monday. Friday. Right. And boy, sometimes the difference just from Friday afternoon to Monday morning of where they've come around, because I've been able to tell them, mm-hmm. I've learned that we don't have to answer today. You know, you don't have to make that decision. Think, sleep on it, talk to your spouse. So all these different things that I've learned over the years, I use. And sometimes I think that actually makes the emotional health worse, is because you're constantly reflecting. But I know that it's making me a better person and making me better in the role that I do.
But you just described something that's really sophisticated, in the sense that people are approaching you oftentimes from a position of fear. Not knowing, being afraid of what can happen, might happen, what mm-hmm. is going to happen.
Right. The unknown.
The unknown, mm-hmm. but also with a certainty that's not real, because our fears are oftentimes harder than the reality that we're really living mm-hmm. into, like you're saying. When did you learn to say, when did you learn how to honor their fear, to respond to them with the emotional force they're coming at, but to also deflect them and say, let's give this a little time?
How did you learn? I don't know when. I think it's just experience and in mm-hmm. training. You know, I do respect the people from our statewide union that have trained me, but then also just working with different people. You know, there's a lot of different personalities. I think I've just learned that's the best way to go. Mm-hmm. You know, I find that there's nothing that needs to be done right at that second, and sometimes,
except to honor the person who
and you know, I rarely find a time where somebody shares that fear, the unknown, uh-huh. and I don't know where it's coming from. I usually know where it's coming from. I usually have said, I felt that way too, or I hear you, but then I kind of say, you know, this is where I've experienced this before, or here's what I'm thinking. And like I said, before I came with them, I said, you can do whatever you want and I'll support you in mm-hmm. any ways. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they'll say, okay, no, thank you, that helps. And then the next day, it's a little bit different story. Or something's evolved just in that 20 or 48 hour period. Right. I've been informed of something else or whatever, and then I've contacted them back. So, you know, I think that we're living in always this fast world, this rat race kind of thing. And I know personally, I've been trying to like figure out how to balance that. So now that I'm trying to figure that out, I'm trying to help others as well.
Right. Let's cut to your third piece of music, the fight song.
Sure.
Do you want to say anything more about that now? Or
again, this is another one that, you know, is got some great lyrics. It's got some words in there about advocating. And obviously, we just talked a little bit about, unfortunately, the word fight comes along with some mm-hmm. negative kind of thing. But that's kind of the reality of what it mm-hmm. is. You can come up with other words, advocating and speaking and whatnot. But sometimes it is a little bit of a fight, and it takes a long time to get what you need to do. And obviously, we talked a little bit, probably about a second, of just the what's going on in the political world here. And if you are paying attention to anything politically, this is one of the songs that's being used by a presidential candidate. And I you know, publicly saying that I am with her.
Okay.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls inside my brain. I will scream loud tonight. Can you hear my voice this time? Is my fight song, take back my life song, prove I'm alright song. My power's turned up, starting right now. I'll be strong, I'll play my fight song, and I don't really care if nobody else believes, 'cause I've still got a lot of fight left in me. And friends, and I'm chasing sleep. Everybody's worried about me. In too deep, I say I'm in too deep. And it's been 2 years, I miss my home. But there's a fire burning in my bones. I still believe, yeah, I still believe. And all those things I didn't say, wrecking balls inside my brain. like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. This is my fight song. Take back my life.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Adam Piasecki. So, Adam, the way we way I close out the show is I ask the guest, what do you do to take care of yourself? And how do you know you need to do it? physically, emotionally, intellectually, daily, weekly, monthly, from time to time? What do you do to intentionally manage? And you've talked about the stress, but what do you do to manage it?
Not just the position I've been in the past few years, but just being a teacher is very stressful.
Yes.
In fact, the quality of work life, the quality of life that teachers have, there was a study done actually by AFT, a good friend of mine down in Horseheads, actually was part of this nationwide, or I think it's statewide thing, and she spoke about it at their convention recently, is something that is a very stressful thing to do. And so as teachers, and then obviously I'm speaking with my other fellow union leaders, it is something that you need to do for yourself and then obviously remind other people about. I will admit I struggle with this. I dump a lot of my time and energy into work. As a classroom teacher, I was doing 12, 13, 14 hour days. Yes. You know, you're there or 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, wasn't leaving there until 4:30. You go home, walk the dogs, maybe get to the gym because you try to balance that a little bit. And then you worked until you fell asleep, and you do that all day long, you know, every day. So you have to figure out trying to find that balance. When you're newer in your career, it's even harder. As you get older, you start realizing how important it is. So, you know, personally, I try to eat very healthy. I don't eat, you know, high fat, high processed kind of foods. I'm very cautious of what I eat, which I think overall, you know, helps with overall health. I do belong to a gym. I don't get there as much as I would like to. I will probably head there this afternoon because I have built it into my schedule today.
A time or two a week?
Yeah. Sometimes I try to get there at least three, but there's other times where you get there once, and just because that's your work schedule, you know, in life schedule. Yeah. But I do try to do that. I wish I could afford massage there. My therapist more often. She's great. She's worth every penny. I actually have to set that appointment up here for that. So I try to do that every few months. So to get rid of the stress that I carry in my shoulders and my back, I've learned that that's something I have to do as well. So there are things that I do, and I try to remember when I'm speaking with the people that I represent and work with, is that I too struggle. So when I hear that they're not doing these things, I say, I get it. We talked about this a little bit ago, but then I say, like, you know, it's worth it for you, not just your overall health, but for your family, your spouse, and everything else that's something you have to do. So those are things I do. I try to take a few minutes at night to vegetate, whether not vegetate, but like just get out of like a high level task, you know, whether it's surfing the internet of a site that I just like to peruse, or just sometimes doing something just around the house, picking up and organizing. It might sound like a task, but it can be much more mind relaxing.
Right. And when you said vegetate, the word that I substituted was mindless.
Right.
Something you can just do without thinking about. It doesn't cost you anything.
Yep.
And other people might say meditate.
Right, which I think is more of a very specific thing. Do sense. I try to do that a little bit. And obviously, you know, you got to find, I've never really had a lot of time for hobbies and this and that. But we, my partner and I do like landscaping and doing perennial gardens and things like that, which we're working on right now. So puttering around doing that and trimming things back can be that mindless thing, but an accomplishment at the same time. That's kind of how I am. I can't sit and just watch, you know, two movies in a row, but I can putter around the garden, then go watch like a half hour show. And that's my way of getting away from the stuff that I'm dealing with.
Right. You can weed or water or deadhead flowers or whatever without having to think a lot. And it's moving your body. And it's that. So I hear the physical care.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for the emotional care? Or is that,
That's even harder. I'm not even close to probably being able to answer that. And I'm still working on how to deal with that. I think I've learned to have a thicker skin. I've learned to let things go a little bit. I've learned how to maybe deal with it the next morning. Mm-hmm. Answering an email at 11:30 at night is not the way to go unless it's an emergency. So prioritizing things like that. I've learned to prioritize a little bit. I've learned to figure out how something can wait a little bit. And I think that's definitely helped.
Right. So that's exercising self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm just curious about. You like theater,
yes,
musical theater. Do you sing?
I don't. I did in high school a little bit, but I don't currently now.
But some people sing along, and that's the way they. It's the funny thing about singing is it expresses the emotion.
Gotcha.
And it also has the same effect on the blood pressure and the heart rate that meditation does.
So let me answer that in a little different way. Now that I know what you're asking, I will sing in the house. I will sing in the car.
That's what I was guessing.
That's what I will do. I do not belong to a choir. I do not belong to something like that. I do not do karaoke. But I hear what you're saying, and yes, that is definitely an outlet.
And that
for
is
me there.
Profound self care. And what happens when I ask these questions of people, there are so many things that we don't think to share. You know what I'm saying?
Because
you haven't framed it that way. But now that I've made the question clear,
I sing along all the time. In fact, I bought one of those little Bluetooth kind of radio things for my phone, so that way when I am outside, I can put it on the picnic table, even if I'm just a few feet away in that landscaped area. And I balance between, obviously, because of the politics that have been going on in the last few weeks, I was listening to that, plus something else, and that way I can have that little bit of an outlet.
Sure. And what do you do for your mind, for your intellect, to restore it, not just to feed you the work stuff?
What do I do for my mind? I probably don't do enough or a lot, since I'm having a hard time answering the question, and maybe that's something I
need
to get
better at. Or maybe it's not the right question.
At,
It may be just your work does it enough, but
We try to do little local area. There's so many things to do in this little area, you know, like going for hikes or going for a run on the trails or going to the farmers markets, things like that, which can definitely still bring in that feeling like you're active and in
processing.
I always want to make sure I'm feeling vital and whatnot. So maybe that's kind of how I do at least taking care of my mind, is doing something that's social, but also, you know, having some friends over or things like that.
And observational. You know?
Yeah.
I would imagine. I imagine you avoid the newspapers, except for major political things that impinge.
The little bit of time that I do have many different news outlets bookmarked, and I'm always kind of perusing through those and seeing what's going on. I like to try to stay current. I like to try to see what's going on. I don't like that feeling like I don't know what's going on.
Right.
And I think sometimes I have to figure out, like, okay, I'm going to listen, I'm going to pay attention, but I'm not going to let it, you know, bother me. I'm not going to do anything with it. But I also struggle more not actually know what's going on. So I definitely like to stay on top of current events and
stuff.
So that's
how that would be the answer to how do you keep yourself, exercised and restored intellectually is the news. But for you, it's setting the baseline.
Mm-hmm.
It's not kind of, you don't experience it as doing something extra special for yourself.
No, that's for me. Even if I don't talk to anybody about it, but what I read, it was something that I just wanted to engage in with my mind.
Yeah, and for me, that's the first half hour in the morning.
Right.
Or the first hour I will spend catching up on news in a way that I will oftentimes read articles about things that I never thought about or never cared about because it's fun.
Yes, there's different sources out there. And then obviously with social media, you got to be careful because sometimes things that are posts that you're scrolling through, you don't know where it's coming from. You don't know what the source. So you're kind of like, what does that title mean? And then you actually have to take the time to read them. So I do make sure that I'm looking at the source. I know that that's important.
Adam, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this hour. You want to close with Pete Seeger's Solidarity Forever. Do you want to say anything about it?
Sure. This was also another song that I played last year when we were struggling as a group of professionals with getting a contract and making sure our voices were heard and being respected within the profession, both with salary benefits and other professional opportunities. So it was kind of our theme song last year. And, one of the things as I get older and the more trained I get in this, the more I'm realizing as time goes on, history gets further and further back. And so the more conversations and the more education that we can keep putting out there about the labor movement and about movements for human and civil rights and things like that need to constantly be there. So I'm realizing I need to do more of that. And it takes sometimes somebody in a position like mine to keep doing that because otherwise people don't know. So I something that I'm always going to strive for. And it's a great song about how people helped each other and not just a small group of people, but a very large group of people. And it still is a very large group of people.
Thank you, Adam.
Yes, thank you.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving, mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
They have taken untold millions that they never toiled to earn, but without our brains.